Next item, please. Thank you both.
151, approve the designation of 7 trees as City of Portland Heritage Trees and remove the heritage tree designation from 5 trees.
Commissioner Fritz?
Colleagues, I'm sure you're all quite disappointed this is so late in the agenda, because I know for several of you this is one of your favorite events of the year. Very happy to introduce the 7 new trees and to explain why the removal of designation for 5 trees. The Heritage Tree Program is an important part of raising public awareness regarding the contribution that trees provide to our community. Thanks to Urban Forestry Commissioner Greg Everhart, formerly a City of Portland employee and still volunteering after she's retired. She's going to give us a brief explanation.
Great. I am Greg Everhart. I'm on Urban Forestry Commission, and I chair the Heritage Tree Committee. And I wanted more time, but I'm going to try and reduce it to the essentials. Can we get our PowerPoint presentation? Because this is sort of a matter of show and tell. I do hope when you get your copy of the current Heritage Tree Guidebook that you will see these trees. I also, for the commissioners where I knew where you lived, not like literally, but by neighborhood, I gave you a map that I hope you'll use in your neighborhood. It actually shows the discrepancies that we have. Not every neighborhood has a heritage tree. And so we'd like to change that. So, for instance, Commissioners Udaly and Fritz live in neighborhoods, I believe, that have no heritage trees, where Commissioner Fritz or Commissioner Fish has moved from one that had only one, but now is in a more older part of town.
An abundance of riches.
12 magnificent, huge trees. And Commissioner Saltzman, because one site had so many trees, is in another part of town that actually is rich in heritage trees. So what you see around you every day is something that can really inspire you. When I came before the council last year, the ordinance has trees to be delisted as well as new heritage trees, and we need you to approve both lists. But I didn't bring pictures of the trees that were being delisted, and I apologize for that. I realized later that there was an interest in that. There were 2 last year. This year there's 5, and that's not enough years to see a trend, but we've had this program for 20 years, and I am concerned that some of the early giants are now starting to age out. And, you know, we're all going to die. But I think we need to sort of step up this program because some of those initial trees are fading. So I want to show them as sort of a last thing where we honor them and point out that we're also going to need more funding for this project. Currently, we have no program where we actually look at all these heritage trees each year. We operate on a complaint basis, or one of the committee members or an arborist in town sees a tree in trouble and calls it in, and then staff responds. And when staff actually needs to go and do work on the tree, or, you know, in these cases, take them down, that also comes out of a very limited budget. So,
before you start, could you just explain to us what does a tree have to be in order to qualify as a public?
I'll get there. Yeah, people sometimes use the acronym HOLY, and I never know what the Y is, but basically historic, connected with a historic person, event, or an historic site, old age.
And is it on public and private property?
Both public and private. The qualifications for both are the same. They need to be large or old or of an interesting or unusual horticultural variety. So you qualify. If it's a public tree, the city can actually just designate it. But if it's on private property, the private property owner signs a consent form, and they basically say, in other words, we protect and value this tree, and we actually commit any heirs of the property or anyone to whom we sell it to also protect it. So it's actually a designation that brings protection to the tree. Brings a plaque, it gets it into the guidebook that you'll get, and people like me and visitors of the city, if you don't use your guidebook, leave it in your office where people that are waiting to see you can look at it. But it's just a special thing. There are maybe 300 of these trees. The population ebbs and flows every year. But they are magnificent, from the smallest to the very large. But I want to show you the ones that are no longer with us. We lost four trees this year. The first was an American chestnut. This is a tree that you've heard of being in trouble throughout this country. This one lost that limb. You see a big scar on it. The tree started to die. It's located between the sidewalk and a home that's used as a daycare. And the city forester, by code, can declare a tree emergency and remove a heritage tree. And in this case, this tree is gone, but we need you to delist it.
I've got two American chestnuts that I planted 26 years ago. How much longer do they have to survive before they might become heritage?
How big are they?
Not as wide as that one, for sure.
Nominate them, and we'll come out and measure them.
I'm on a mission now. We're meant to get some in my neighborhood before next year's report.
That'd be great. That's exactly what we need.
When they're removed, what do you do with the wood?
There's a whole process. An elm tree could be infected by Dutch elm disease. Others are quite valuable wood, and so urban forestry, I don't have the city forester with me, but it's something that actually the whole community of arborists is working on. If it's environmentally zoned, the wood is actually returned to the site. So we lost a madrone tree a couple years ago. It became play equipment in Madrone Park, for which it was named. So urban forestry is actually in the forefront, leading with sort of repurposing.
Is there a specific process related to that?
Yeah, but I can't cover it in 10 minutes.
Okay, so the answer is yes. I'll look it up on my own.
Okay.
Thank you. We actually have had some community.
I'll have Jen get the information to our city forester. This is a hybrid birch, and you can just see that it's losing leaves up top. It was reported by the homeowner as well as a volunteer tree inspector. Again, it was an immediate hazard, and it got its removal permit. But you can see just how big some of these trees are. And I wanted also to show you that there's diversity. However, the last three of the trees to be delisted are elm trees. And we've got elm trees in the city that are 100 and more years old. That on the left is a branch that was 4 foot in diameter that came down. That left the other two branches unstable. So this tree was definitely a hazard. They're so big that they can hit a number of buildings and the street.
Was this in the storm?
One
of the storms?
Yeah. It can be wind, it can be water. We'll have more delistings next year because we had ice and snow damage this year. This tree is actually still standing. This is in Laurelhurst. It's a magnificent tree. It wasn't deemed to be an immediate hazard. It's a potential hazard. It's been on the list for 20 years. I actually live near this tree, so I visited it numerous times. It's in Laurelhurst on the street. And it's actually impressive to see when a tree is reported how carefully urban forestry checks on it and prunes it and kind of does everything they can do. They have cleaned out the dead wood in the crown. They have taken weight off the end of these extremely long branches. But it's over 100 years old. That's how long old Laurelhurst is. And it's had a succession of ever bigger branches come down. And even with the pruning, they're really to the point where they can't do anything more for this tree. There's decay in the crown, the top of the tree, in the trunk, and at the base. So in this case, because it wasn't an immediate hazard, it was potential, we used the process that's in code, and we sent public notice, and we had a hearing at the Urban Forestry Commission. We did have one person testify saying she just hoped it could be there for another year or two. But Urban Forestry and My Heritage Tree Committee have arborists that are tree risk assessors. And the neighbor that is next to this tree agrees with us that although they've loved it, it's time to go. So because it's a heritage tree, we need you to concur with delisting it so then Urban Forestry can take it down. This elm tree is down. It actually was flagging, and the elm monitor program was where this was spotted. So they go around, they're checking for signs of Dutch elm disease. This tested positive, and so it was removed immediately because it's something that can spread to the other trees. So those are the five candidates for what we call delisting. They will come off the list, and that means that come Arbor Month in April, we'll be able to have them out of that guidebook. It will be more accurate. Won't be completely accurate because we've lost some trees that I can't tell you about till the Urban Forestry Commission okays it. So this is the good news part, and I will try and be brief. But I want to add the diameter at breast height of these trees because you have had to rule and make regulations regarding removal of trees. And I can't stress too much that trees grow at different rates. And so you're going to see some very significant trees that aren't that big. But where I know that, I will give you their age. So this tree is very close to my age. It's over 60. It has a diameter breast height of only 7 inches. But it's the largest bald cypress that we know of in Portland. It's in the Maplewood Neighborhood Association, which has only 3 heritage trees. And it's in a site where we had 2 trees designated last year. This tree is horticulturally significant, and it's also historically significant because there was a nursery there that lasted through 2 families, 2 generations each. And the current owner was the daughter of that second nurseryman, and she's really got a wonderful tree collection there. So this tree, which is native to sort of the southern swampy part of this country, is now being planted as a street tree, but has not reached this size. So it's a great place for people to see what a bald cypress can do. The next tree is very unusual. I have the curator of Hort Arboretum on the Heritage Tree Committee. None of us think that there's another one of these trees in the entire city. This is from China, northern and central China. It's named lacebark pine for the way the bark, after about 10 years, starts to flake off, and you got that sort of astonishing multicolored trunk. Again,
is there one in the arboretum?
No.
Oh, there's
no. No. Martin has been inspired to see if he can find one, but it will be. This tree is 62 years old. It'll be, years before something would actually show this bark. Again, this is only 10 inches diameter breast height. Now, this tree, by contrast, is about 5 feet across. This is 66 inches. The house was built in 1916. May have grown from an acorn that someone brought from the Midwest. A lot of people settled here from, areas where this tree is native. A northern red oak. This was my favorite tree of the 2 days that we toured all the potential nominees. It's had great care. It probably can live several more centuries. And the people that nominated it live there, so they're very devoted to it. I put this one next because it's really an unusual tree, and you've just seen a huge tree. But this camperdown elm is only 20 feet tall. On the other hand, its trunk, just because of the way it grows, is over 2 feet in diameter. It's kind of like a little storybook tree. And although we have 2 of these trees on our list, this would be the second one for Foster Powell. We don't have many heritage trees anywhere east or even near I-205. But you can walk under this tree and see this incredible structure. It is probably 70 years old. Because all the camperdown elms come from one original tree. They're actually a cultivar that's grafted.
Can we go back to that for one sec? Because that elm,
yeah.
It does look suspiciously like a weeping willow.
Mm-hmm.
Are they related in any way?
No, one is in the genus Salix, which has whole different characteristics. This elm actually is related to more closely related to some of those giant elms that we see on our neighborhood streets and that we had as failures. I don't think you saw the 3 elms that have or will be coming down. It's just some people really like weeping trees, so you're correct. It's got a similar form to a weeping willow, but different leaf. This tree is called Cindy by its neighbors. It's a landmark. Up in Arbor Lodge, it was nominated by a member of their tree team. And we haven't figured out why it's named Cindy, but people go there. It's a landmark. They meditate, they pray, they do yoga. And we felt from kind of a functional point of view that this is a great example of a large form conifer that's actually happy in a planting strip. So from a stormwater habitat, all those kind of functional reasons for a tree, this is actually a great example. It would be a great place for people to visit. And it's huge. It's native to Oregon, not necessarily to Portland. The final two trees are in one of our parks, Fern Hill Park. They would be additions to the two trees that Concordia Neighborhood has, although they just lost one, so they're really down to one. They are 25 and 27 inches DBH. What's significant about these trees is that they are not a cultivar. We did just finish our street tree inventory. We've got a lot of these trees, but they're a form that's very tightly oval and vertical. You see them in narrow planting strips. So we think this tree would actually be very resistant to some of the pests and diseases. It's not invasive, and having it as a heritage tree would actually promote people planting it more frequently. So that's one of the trees, and there's this one that's in a more shady setting. This is my last slide. I'm really sorry to rush through and not really describe how they're nominated. If you want to ask me any questions, I'm happy to answer it. But I wanted to close with the fact that heritage trees are not distributed equally through this city, and there's a lot of potential reasons for that. It's lot size, planting strip width, the history of large lots, tree collectors that may have been wealthy individuals, just some parts of the city being older than others, or having nurseries or old orchards. We think these trees are inspiring. Some of them are really just awesome and majestic. And so we welcome you to spot trees. We hope that we will find more partners in some of these neighborhoods and actually add some more types of species and perhaps at least find, say, the tallest native conifer in every neighborhood that currently doesn't have a heritage tree. So that's it.
Fabulous. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I'll share my tree story.
Sure.
So when I was growing up, those of you from here remember that the Lloyd Center used to be a lot smaller than it is today. And it used to have sort of an H shape to it and then a atrium restaurant. I can't remember what the name of the restaurant was, but the restaurant looked out.
Aladdin.
What was it?
The Aladdin.
The Aladdin? It looked out onto a really large, beautiful tree. And I was like 7 or 8 years old, so I couldn't tell you what the large, beautiful tree was. But that tree was in my great-grandmother's backyard. And so my grandmother and my mom used to like to take me there and say, that's the yard that we used to play in and grew up in. And, of course, as the Lloyd Center expanded, it disappeared. But that's my tree story. Now you all know. Any questions regarding this good report?
Thank you for your good work.
Any public testimony on this matter? This is a non-emergency first reading. It moves to a second reading. Thank you.
Thank you very much for all your work on the Urban Forestry Commission and
particularly
this report. That was very helpful.
Thanks. Thank you.